This is Front Burner.
Hey, this is Salima Shivji walking along the streets of Washington, D.C. on Inauguration Day. A Washington that is kind of unrecognizable right now. There are troops and police officers and police vehicles everywhere you look. Some of the soldiers are really quite friendly, as long as you show your press pass properly.
Hello, hey, how you doing? Hello.
Back again, huh?
Back again, I told you I'd come back. Most of them look a little bored, definitely cold. It's not warm here in Washington right now. And there are a lot of checkpoints to keep protesters out.
You guys are busy today, huh?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
The National Plumbing Convention.
Oh, I've heard.
Yeah, so we're screening for that.
Bags are being searched with a fine-tooth comb. TSA agents that are usually stationed in airports have been brought in from across the country to help, and they really know how to search. It's being done very thoroughly.
Can you do me one more thing? Can you unzip your jacket? We just gotta see if nothing's inside the jacket.
The National Mall, which is quite far from where I am right now, has been filled with some 200,000 flags, and they're meant to replace the people, the thousands of people who would normally converge on the Capitol for a presidential inauguration. And, you know, this is, of course, a historic one. There are people around, but they're basically hovering outside of the zones, outside of that lockdown core. So the vibe here today is really different. It's mostly just quiet. There are a few vendors who took the risk to come down to try to sell some of their merchandise. The two that I spoke with came all the way from New York, and boy, did they notice a difference from years past.
I didn't honestly think that it would be this much army and cops on every single street.
I saw two hats. Nothing. There's more reporters out here and military than anyone. I'm so glad that they're evicting them. I'm just glad, you know, I'm happy today. Whether I sell or not, I'm just glad Biden's in.
But still, even with all the emptiness and just a sprinkling of people, there was still a sense of relief and of happiness from the people that I spoke with. I spoke with some people who came all the way from California. And even with all the uncertainty, the hesitation, the potential threat of violence and the massive security, they just wanted to experience the emotion of this moment.
We were told to stay away with all the ugliness that we've kind of been going through all for the past 4 years, really, but especially this past year. It was like the light at the end of the tunnel,
yeah,
that we wanted to witness.
And be as close to as possible. Even if you can't see there, be it, you know, see it, sit there, watch it, just to know that you're in the presence of it in the city where it's like, oh, finally, finally.
All right, so that is the view from the ground from my colleague Salima Shivji. Thank you so much for that, Salima. We're really appreciative. And as you just heard, besides the police presence, the inauguration of Joe Biden as America's 46th president was a pared-down affair. Fitting for a country dealing with a deadly pandemic and attack on democracy.
Growing inequity, the sting of systemic racism, a climate in crisis, America's role in the world. Any one of these would be enough to challenge us in profound ways. But the fact is, we face them all at once, presenting this nation with one of the gravest responsibilities we've had.
CBC Washington correspondent Paul Hunter has been covering the inauguration, and he joins me now to report on the meaning behind the day's pageantry, Trump's last day in power, and the most pressing problems facing this historic new administration. I'm Jamie Poisson, and this is Front Burner. Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for making the time. I understand that we're reaching you on the roof of the Canadian Embassy right now.
Yes, you are, where it's very windy and very cold. But, I mean, you can't beat the view from here. It was a privilege to watch the inauguration from this amazing spot.
Yeah, it sounds really neat, but I do hope you are staying warm. I want to begin today with a real standout moment from the inauguration. Amanda Gorman, the very first American youth poet laureate. She's just 22 years old, and she recited this poem that was incredibly powerful.
When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this
never-ending shade. The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast.
And talk to me about this moment from the inauguration. What did you make of her message?
Unreal. So amazing. Blew me away. She was incredible. I mean, the more she recited her poem, the more I think everyone was drawn in. It was bang on message with the unity aspects. You know, she was writing it, evidently, as the riots were going on here on January 6th. And that's how she worked, you know, some of that stuff in.
Being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it.
But look, I mean, Joe Biden's speech was exactly what was needed, but her poem was the topper. I mean, I want to say that it was the it moment of the day, super inspiring mm-hmm. and uplifting.
Right. You know, talk about meeting the moment, hey? Like, there was that end of it.
As we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid, the new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
It was a stunning moment. I think that will be remembered for many years to come.
I think so. I think that was recognized as she was reciting it. I mean, I wasn't really expecting anything out of it. I don't mean, you know, that the way it sounds, but it knocked me over. It was, as I say, it was amazing.
I also want to talk about another big moment from the day, Kamala Harris, and she became the first woman and the first Black and South Asian person to be sworn in as the vice president.
So help me God.
So help me God.
And that's a lot of firsts. And I have to imagine, and certainly not to suggest that she's not up for the task here, but that also comes with a lot of pressure.
Yeah, you know, I wondered what Hillary Clinton was thinking as she watched from the same stage as Kamala Harris was being sworn in. Harris indeed represents a lot of firsts. Highest political office for a woman in the history of this country. But to be Black and South Asian as well, you know, I was speaking with someone who happened to be in the crowd of ticketed attendees afterward, who said spontaneous applause broke out for Harris in the crowd at various times during the ceremony. There are many who are thrilled at what she's achieved and what she represents, but yeah, that comes with pressure. Her mom mm-hmm. once said that, you know, being first is a great thing, but then you have to make sure that you're not the last, so
right.
do not fail. And don't forget, I mean, she's basically seen as the likely candidate for Democrats for the White House in 2024. Biden is presumed to be one term only, and she's already the strongest bet for the nomination in 4 years. For the presidency, another obvious first. So there's extra pressure on her now to live up to that billing as well.
And just an interesting fact from the day that I really loved to learn about, that she was wearing purple, which many believed was a nod to one of her heroes, political trailblazer Shirley Chisholm, who was the first Black woman in Congress and who ran for Democratic leadership in the 70s.
I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am Black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman, and I'm equally proud of that. I am the candidate of the people of America.
So that's like a pretty incredible narrative arc there. Let's get to Biden's big inaugural address. You mentioned that it's what the country needed. It ran about 20 minutes. And what were the big moments that stood out to you the most?
Two words that he said, uncivil war.
We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal.
There are all kinds of challenges faced by Joe Biden right now, COVID, the economy, racial injustice, and on and on and on. But, you know, while the divide we keep talking about may not be bigger or more important than any of those others, it sure impedes progress on fighting any of it. American versus American. Without bridging that divide, everything else is harder. And it is uncivil. I thought it was a great way to put it. I thought his talking about the war on truth and facts was interesting as well.
There is truth and there are lies.
lies told for power and for profit. And each of us has a duty and a responsibility as citizens, as Americans, to defend the truth and defeat the lies.
I mean, so often in his speech, he seemed to be talking about Donald Trump without mentioning him by name. And that's one of those. I mean, this is a country where millions of people still believe Biden was elected illegitimately, that it was stolen, who believe climate change is a hoax, who bought in on any number of falsehoods put forth by Donald Trump. That, too, is a major challenge for Biden to get past in getting stuff done. I think really, though, Jamie, my takeaway was the tone. I mean, civility, respect, dignity. A massive change from the vibe of the past 4 years.
To all those who did not support us, let me say this. Hear me out as we move forward. Take a measure of me and my heart. And if you still disagree, so be it. That's democracy. That's America.
And when you say that this is what the country needed, is that what you're talking about here?
100%. I mean, it needed and wanted. You know, I think back to the day that Biden was declared president-elect and the sort of celebratory, in not in all of America, but certainly in many parts of it, feeling of okay, now we'll get back to governing, just get back to normal, move beyond the past 4 years. And that was a big part of the vibe in his speech today.
At this time, in this place, let's start afresh. All of us, let's begin to listen to one another again, hear one another, see one another, show respect to one another. Every disagreement doesn't have to be a cause for total war.
Particularly the themes of unity and peace, they also seemed quite apparent in the musical choices at the inauguration. Obviously, Amazing Grace, This Land Is Your Land.
From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters.
I couldn't help but think of the last inauguration where Trump's team struggled to book any A-list performers. I don't know if you remember those guys that were just like playing on that weird giant piano. But this year they had Lady Gaga, Jennifer Lopez, Garth Brooks. Talk to me a little bit about how the performances reflected the political messages of the day.
Sure. I mean, Lady Gaga, surprise, all about the outfit, right? Gold dove on her chest, symbol of peace, totally on message. That our flag was still. J-Lo, all patriotic songs all the time. And in Spanish, she delivered a line from the Pledge of Allegiance.
Una nación bajo Dios indivisible con libertad y justicia para todos.
One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Obviously a nod to Hispanic Americans, hello border wall, and as well underlining Biden's message broadly. You know, as for Garth Brooks, that's interesting.
Amazing Grace.
He's a Republican. In fact, he was asked to perform at Trump's inauguration in 2016, but declined. And to be fair, he also sang at Obama's inauguration, which, to be honest, I'd forgotten, Jamie. All I remember from that day was Aretha Franklin. Anyway, arguably, all three effectively put forth Biden's message of unity, inclusivity, and bridging that divide. Brooks himself even said unity was the reason that he came.
If I can ask you to sing this last verse with me, not just the people here, but the people at home, at work, as one, united. Amazing grace. How sweet.
So I want to come back to Donald Trump, who you mentioned earlier, and there were several things about the day today that were odd, that were strange. The masks, the social distancing, the incredible military and police presence, which of course was there because just 2 weeks ago, the last time you and I spoke, a mob of insurrectionists had taken siege of the Capitol where the inauguration was playing out today. But I do have to say, I did find it a bit strange to see this major U.S. political event unfolding without Donald Trump.
It's true, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, he was there in spirit, right? I mean, Joe Biden didn't name Trump, but he effectively repudiated so much of what Trump stood for.
But the answer is not to turn inward, to retreat into competing factions, distrusting those who don't look like you, or worship the way you do, or don't get their news from the same sources you do.
I mean, this was Joe Biden really trying to turn the page, but wary that there's no gain in antagonizing the millions of people in this country who still support Donald Trump, so no cheap shots. But Biden did say this country must push back against lies and false information. He talked about the pushback that's needed against nativism and white nationalism.
A rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat.
Even, you know, Biden said, I will be president for all Americans, which is a clear jab at Donald Trump, if not right. explicitly. So Trump may have been on his way to Florida as those words were being spoken, but in a sense, he was laced throughout Biden's speech, and obviously intentionally so.
Yeah, and I mean, talking about his speech, sort of at the beginning of the speech, he basically says democracy has prevailed, which, you know, would be another very direct jab at Donald Trump.
Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause.
Before we talk about Trump a little bit more, talk to me a little bit about the other Republicans there, including Vice President Mike Pence, who I guess sort of seemed to be playing a bit of a fill-in role here.
It's hard to say what Pence was thinking. I mean, I wondered what was on his mind throughout the ceremony. There's been a lot of talk of the distance lately between Trump and Pence. I mean, to be honest, Jamie, seeing Pence there seemed out of place, weirdly, after all the antipathies of the past 4 years. I mean, I don't know anyone who was more loyal to Trump during Trump's time in office. Mike mm-hmm. Pence did reach out to Kamala Harris before the ceremony, so there's that. But he was certainly not there in Trump's stead. I mean, what really matters to people is, did the president go? And, you know, for the first time in 152 years, the president did not attend, and that speaks mountains.
And instead of attending, he instead had this sort of send-off rally at this military base.
I hope they don't raise your taxes. But if they do, I told you so. We've left it all, as the athletes would say, we've left it all in the field.
And what was Donald Trump's final message as president?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. Firstly, I note that to the very end, it seemed he had to twist facts to suit him. He talked about winning more votes than any sitting president in history. In history.
That's an all-time record by a lot, by many millions. In the history of sitting presidents, it's been really just an honor.
Which is true. He got more than 70 million. But he left out the fact that Joe Biden got 80 million. But Biden wasn't a sitting president at the time of the election, so technically Trump's right. But you have to wonder why Trump so consistently tries to frame things that way. But other than that, it was when Trump said, I'll be back in some mm-hmm. form.
I will always fight for you. I will be watching. I will be listening.
Well, you're right. So what does that mean? Trump TV? Will he run again? Will he use his sway over tens of millions of people who voted for him to guide the next Republican candidate? Will the next Republican running for president need to be like Trump, Trump 2.0? Will Trump stay on the scene from afar? Like, who knows what he means
right.
by that? But that was
will
his message.
Will it be some member of his
DC.
Family? Yeah.
I know. Is it going to be Donald Trump Jr.? I mean, you know, that was the message put to Americans as he left Washington. You know, say Democrats everywhere, it was an ominous one.
I wish the new administration great luck and great success. I think they'll have great success. They have the foundation to do something really spectacular. And again, we put it in a position like it's never been before.
Right. And I just feel like I have to mention that when Donald Trump finished that speech that we're talking about, he finished it to his what has become, I guess, his theme song, the YMCA.
Young man, there's no need to feel down. I said, young man.
And then when his plane was taking off to go to Florida, they blasted Frank Sinatra's My Way, which was really quite something to watch those images.
Yes, It was my way.
I'd like to end this conversation today by looking ahead. We have this message of unity today, you know, as we've talked about, lots of talk of a new era or a return to normalcy. I guess it depends which pundit you're listening to. Biden moved very quickly today with 17 executive orders, some of which moved to undo Trump's legacy, halting construction on Trump's border wall, reversing the travel ban on targeting Muslim countries. But this idea of unity, this idea of a new era, I cannot help but think that it's going to come crashing into reality real quick here, especially with an imminent impeachment trial in the Senate coming up.
It's not a divide, Jamie. It's a chasm. I mean, it is a real thing in this country, and it is a serious problem. You know, we'll know soon from Nancy Pelosi when the impeachment trial begins. But, you know, talking about Trump, he will continue to take up oxygen with that trial, something that no matter the outcome will rile up Trump supporters, deepen that divide, people who will believe that he's being railroaded. I mean, Biden knows this. He also knows all kinds of Republicans are enraged over Trump's role in the Capitol Hill rampage. And so Biden has that on his side as he tries to bring unity. But keep in mind as well that while Biden has other things to do, other challenges to take on, so too Trump has other worries. He's got a lot of debt coming due from his business dealings. There are federal and state investigations involving him. And as we know now, he did not pardon himself before leaving office. So while Biden's got a lot to get done and, you know, uniting the country is a big and a tough one, Trump's got a lot to worry about as well. I mean, arguably all of it, you know, mind you, keeping him in the headlines for some time to come. It's a long way of saying Biden's talking unity, but all the issues that have helped lead to so much of the divisiveness in this country, championed in so many ways by Trump, will remain front and center as long as Trump remains in the spotlight, which seems likely.
Okay. Paul, thank you so much for this conversation and hope to talk to you real soon. I have a feeling that we will be.
Indeed. My pleasure, Jamie.
Okay, so while we're on the topic of Biden's first priorities in office, he has followed through with his promise to revoke the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline by executive order. Justin Trudeau responded to the news with a very diplomatic statement that says, quote, "While we welcome the president's commitment to fight climate change, we are disappointed but acknowledge the president's decision to fulfill his election campaign promise on Keystone XL. Alberta Premier Jason Kenney was less understanding. Kenney is now calling on the federal government to impose trade sanctions if the president doesn't review this decision." Well, Trudeau will get a chance to speak with Biden again soon about this and other issues. The president's first foreign call will be with the prime minister on Friday. That's all for today. I'm Jamie Poisson. Thanks so much for listening to Front Burner, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.